I'll take that. Hi, you're listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning, Fran.
Hi. What's
Hi.
Up?
I, you know, lots of things are up.
So this is our last show before Hanukkah.
Hanukkah, right.
Yeah.
Yes, the combination of Christmas and Hanukkah.
I know, and it's completely combined this year because Erev Hanukkah, the first night of Hanukkah, is Christmas Eve.
And that's not normal.
I know, and then Kwanzaa's going to start. They're all going to be at the same freaking time.
Oh, my God.
So all these different cultures are going to be celebrating all this different stuff.
I'm going to have a hard time deciding which one to celebrate.
You can decide. You can celebrate any of them.
Well, we already have. I started putting up decorations in the house. So
yes.
We have decorations in the house.
Yeah.
And they are oriented towards both of our religions.
Yes.
Whether or not Christmas is a religion when you have Santa Claus. That's another question. we won't get into that.
You can question your religion all you like.
Yeah,
I'm
you
good
can.
With your religion.
You can.
You seem to be questioning it more than I am.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, I guess it's the commercialism of the holiday that gets me a little unnerved.
It just seems that I'm more at peace with my Judaism than you are with your Christianity.
Okay.
You think that's true?
And you certainly can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Well, I think the kind of Judaism I was raised with, I had a lot of permission to be progressive and to think critically. And we are encouraged to question God. I mean,
see, when you're raised Christian, you're not encouraged at all to question that.
I think it depends where you go to church.
Well, probably. Right.
Yeah.
Right. But if you were in the atmosphere that I was in, there was no question. This is the way it was. And then, of course, you know, when you get older and you start looking and going, wait a second. Well, you know, how come my like really good Jewish friends are like not like accepted by my religion, and they're not going to go where I'm going to go, and I am, and they're not, and I did not. It just started to all get all scrambled up.
Yeah, we don't
South
have
Park
that.
Did a great episode on that.
Oh yeah,
remember because it's Stan, right? Is the Jewish kid?
Kyle
is the Jewish kid. So Kyle decided to become a Christian because he found out that if he was a Jew, he was going to go to hell.
Right.
And he got into this whole, you know, thing about that. And it's like, you know, it's all just such a, we probably shouldn't talk about this today.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to anger some people.
It might. Like I said, I'm pretty at peace because like, as I said, in my Judaism, I've been encouraged to think critically. We're accepting of other religions. We were always told that as long as you're a righteous person, you could be whatever religion you want.
Right.
I was raised with a progressive version of Judaism where there was male and female egalitarianism. And I was raised with a lot of traditions,
right.
And I also feel like I got to participate in the secular American society.
Right.
So, anyway.
You know, my feeling is should there be a God, God should accept all, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah. Well, that's what we believe. But
well, yeah. That's what I would like to believe.
Yeah.
So therefore, I am on hold as far as religion goes.
Aww.
Right now.
All right.
Still on hold. What can I say?
So me, not so much. So let's talk about this really hard thing that I'm going to talk about today.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be doing this
a
lot today.
We're going to jump into that. So,
okay.
What I want to do for today for both Radio Naturopath and for Bicycle Talk, these are shows in honor of my father, Myron Storch, who unexpectedly passed away a week ago yesterday on December 13th, the 14th of Kislev, 5777, and he was killed in a tragic accident. He was actually out walking for exercise, and he was hit by a truck.
Right.
So you're going to get into the particulars of that.
Oh,
more.
I have a list, yeah.
Right. But, so because you know. that's a bicycle and walking advocacy issue.
Yeah, it's a bike ped
issue.
Thing. Yeah, it's a
yes,
bike ped
especially
thing, sure.
the deal was that my father, you'll talk about
well,
this
we'll
too.
Talk about it all. We'll talk
yes.
about it all, sure.
So anyway, so what I want to do to honor my father, I want to talk about, well, some of his health issues.
Yeah.
And so.
Because he can't defend himself, so why not?
Right. But I want to talk about it in a loving and respectful way and in a way that can help people. So the big deal is that my poor father suffered from bipolar disorder. And so this was a theme my whole life, you know, that when I was young, my father was not medicated. And so we had pretty tempestuous relationship. My father was a really good guy. And the deal was he was kind of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So when he was Mr. Hyde, he was horrible. He could be really scary. He could be abusive. He could be mean. He could be unpredictable. And he could spin out on a dime. When he was Dr. Jekyll, he was the most wonderful man ever. I'm a little biased because he's my daddy and I love him. But, he really was the most wonderful man ever. And he was very altruistic. He really cared about other people. He cared about what other people were doing. He was, a sort of 50s version of a helicopter dad. I mean, he cared about every aspect of my life. He was kind of in my biz, if you know what I mean. Both my parents were kind of like that. They were not sort of absent parents in any way, shape, or form. And if I ever needed to talk to him about something, he would give me advice, unless he was mad at me, in which case that was harder. But anyway, the cool thing is that my father, as he got older, one of the things that happens, I believe, as you get older with bipolar disorder is, or with any mental illness, as you age, your illness can exacerbate. So let me take a step back and talk about what bipolar disorder is a little bit. So bipolar disorder is a little bit different than straight up depression. It's divided into roughly four categories. You have bipolar 1, 2, 3, and some people talk about 4. So bipolar 1 is what you think about as classic manic depression. We don't say manic depressive disorder anymore. We call it bipolar disorder. Bipolar 1 is where the person can become extremely depressed and be non-functional for weeks, months at a time, and also have manic episodes. And in the manic episodes in bipolar 1 are very dramatic. So the person can go on spending sprees. They can talk a lot. They can spend many nights not sleeping, and they have tons of energy. They can get into serious addiction things like it, of any kind. They could do, they could be taking drugs, or they could be gambling, or they could be shopping. And there could be different, different versions of this. And so, unfortunately, it does run in my family. My grandfather had bipolar 1, and my uncle probably bipolar 2, which is what my father had. So it's really difficult, and it can be difficult to treat, and it can be very hard on the people who love them, because these people are very labile, and they will be very depressed, or they will be very, manic and very hard to manage. And when they're manic, they can be very happy or they can be very mean. So you don't know what you're going to get. Bipolar 2 is hypomania. So instead of being extremely manic, where you go on these sprees and you're up for days at a time, you're primarily depressed, but you have times when you're a little bit manic, and the people, and in the hypomania, they're not as, it's not as dramatic as bipolar 1. So when you have bipolar 2, you're going to tend to, you might get agitated, you might get irritable, you might have episodes where you're pretty intense, but it's not nearly as dramatic, and you're primarily depressed, and it can be hard to get out of that depression. And then there's bipolar 3, which is cyclothymia. So you just have dramatic mood swings that are about equal in length, where today you'll be pretty upbeat and tomorrow you'll be pretty down, and you cycle back and forth in about equal measure. And again, the mania doesn't tend to be as pronounced as bipolar 1. And some people talk about bipolar 4, and bipolar 4 is kind of interesting. I don't know if that's an official title, but it's discussed in that someone who's depressed may be given an SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, which is a common class of drug that's given to people with depression, because there is a serotonin theory of depression, whereas some people have low serotonin function, that neurotransmitter, and if it's not functioning well, that can cause depression. That's a theory. It's questioned, but I definitely know people and have patients who go on an SSRI, like your Lexapro, also known as, that's the brand name of escitalopram, or fluoxetine, also known as Prozac, or sertraline, also known as Zoloft, or Celexa, which is also known as citalopram, or Cymbalta, which is also known as duloxetine. How's that for you? Anyway, so those are SSRIs. And so if you're taking one of these or know someone who is, that's how they work. They block the reuptake of serotonin. You've got two nerves sitting next to each other. A nerve ordinarily dumps neurotransmitter into the space between the nerves that called the synapse, and it bonds to the next nerve, which makes it fire. So what happens with an SSRI is that you take the drug and it blocks the receptors that once that substance is dumped into the space or synapse, it can be reuptaken by the previous nerves to store for later. Well, these drugs block that so that there's more neurotransmitter in the synapse so the nerve can keep firing. And so that's a common drug that's used. There is a phenomenon where someone who was thought to be depressed may take an SSRI for their depression and they can develop mania as a result of that. And so that's considered to be bipolar 4. So those are the four basic kinds of bipolar disorder. The interesting thing is I have some information here. It is a chronic disabling psychiatric disorder with a lifetime mortality rate from suicide between 10 and 20%.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Really?
So wow, it's pretty bad. The other thing, and it says here that despite its heavy toll, little progress has been made in the development of novel or improved therapeutics of this common condition, which affects over 2% of the population. Now, that statistic of 2% of the population, it just says 2% of the population. I'm assuming this is because this is an article written by Raman Parsi from Columbia University, that 2% is 2% of the population of the United States. I don't know if it's 2% of the population of the world, but it does affect 2% of the population, which is not nothing. That's a lot of people. That means out of all the 100 people you know, two of them have bipolar disorder.
That's That's pretty, pretty...
It's pretty common.
Pretty common. Now, bipolar disorder is a genetic thing, right? It's not something that we're environmentally altered by?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly in my... certainly he's proud of his great question. Certainly in my family's case, it's genetic. It's quite obvious that it's genetic.
Well, yeah, and we've seen some signs from other members
of
your family.
I have a saying in Eastern European Judaism, we do not have great genes for mental health. We have wonderful genes for intellect, but not so much for mental health. And sometimes there's a fine line between genius and madness, I think. But
well,
anyway,
I think that's true.
But speaking from experience in my family, there's a lot of mental illness. God, yeah. I love you all, and I have to say that, but it's true. There's a lot of mental illness ranging from obsessive compulsive disorder to depression to bipolar disorder to even schizophrenia.
But that's probably true in any like heavy ethnic background too.
Perhaps, I don't know.
Because of the fact that, you marry your own kind, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes, that there's...
So you're going to run into a problem genetically on that.
You got it, that the recessive genes come out, absolutely.
Right.
So Nancy did a really cool thing by marrying an African guy.
Yeah, that was probably pretty smart.
That's, she said that, I had a couple come in to see me who was, she was Jewish and he was African American. I said, you're doing a really good thing for the gene pool here. Then they had never heard that. I'm like, oh, absolutely. Your gene pools are very diverse. So the recessive genes, you're not going to get those. And if you see my nephews, they're just beautiful and healthy and fit and, and they got, so the recessive genes are not going to come out so much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Nancy did a good thing that way. Maybe we'll have a little less passing on of the mental illness stuff, especially if they go on and marry a field. I don't know what they'll do, but you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so bipolar disorder, it's difficult to treat. And there are things that people do to treat it with natural medicine. Anything you can do to improve your lifestyle is going to improve bipolar disorder. So if you eat your essential fatty acids, if you eat your fish and your nuts and seeds, if you have, that's going to reduce inflammation in the brain and it's going to nourish the nerves so that they can behave more readily and they have their membrane stabilized. Likewise, magnesium is going to do that for you. It's a great membrane stabilizer. So those are two natural medicine things that you can do that might be helpful for bipolar disorder. Also, just living a healthy lifestyle, getting your exercise, being happy, reducing stress, eating a healthy diet, avoiding food intolerances. All the usual things that you do to have a good lifestyle and have good health are going to improve your bipolar disorder. Of course, there's a huge movement in natural medicine, which would be our friend Natasha Campbell McBride, who wrote the book The GAPS Diet. So the GAPS diet is a kind of a big deal, and you can look up her book of all about the GAPS diet. GAPS stands for gut and psychology syndrome, and her belief and studies indicate that if the gut's not working right, you're going to have psychiatric issues. So let's clean up the gut. And so the GAPS diet is pretty similar to what we call the specific carbohydrate diet. So it's a relatively low carbohydrate diet, and you take out grains from the diet. And it's pretty similar to this specific carbohydrate diet. And there's an encouragement of certain nutritional substances. One of them is bone broth, which is where you take a carcass, a chicken carcass or an organic chicken carcass or organic animal bone of whatever animal you like. And as long as the animal was fed healthfully, could be pork, could be beef, could be chicken, could be turkey. And then you make bone broth. And how you make bone broth is you take a bone.
We do that.
And you cook it for at least a day or more. And so the cool thing about the bone broth, bones have everything in them that you need to regenerate, because inside the bones are stem cells. And stem cells are going to provide nutrition for every cell in your body. Also, when you cook bone broth down, you're cooking down the collagen and you're cooking down a lot of vitamins and minerals, and it's going to be in a form that's very absorbable. So you're sending that collagen down, and it's going to be able to heal and nourish the gut. You also absorb that. And by the way, bone broth is a good thing for anything that has collagen. So if you're interested in having bone broth most days, it could help your joints and your joint pain. It's a good thing. And so gut and psychology syndrome is really big on bone broth. Have some bone broth every day, a bunch of times a day.
It makes sense. It's kind of like the inside of the animal.
Yeah.
As we are an animal. It's
right.
Kind of our main structure.
Right. Well, so, right, and the stem cells.
Don't we get like bone marrow? Don't we get blood and all that from bone? I mean, it's
well, there's
all
stem cells in bone marrow. Stem cells can be made into anything.
Right.
Right. So you're eating stem cells. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily going to take those stem cells and use them to make other stuff, but you're going to use the nutrients in them to heal whatever. So if you have a healthy digestive system, the rest of you is going to be a lot healthier, and that's the theory there. The other thing that they believe in, they're very related to Sally Fallon and the Weston Price diet folks, who are very much into, they're not into being vegetarians, they are into eating meat and dairy, but as long as the meat and dairy is grass-fed and very healthfully raised, they believe that you get a lot of nutrients from those foods, and they're mostly anti-grain. If you do go through Sally Fallon, it's not the same as the GAPS diet, because she does believe in eating some grains. But when she talks about grains, she talks about having sourdough bread, so that the sourdough breaks down starches that are not healthful for you. And the sourdough can be made from good quality wheat. So if you're going to eat wheat, my advice is to eat einkorn wheat. Stay away from modern wheat, because einkorn wheat is the ancient wheat. It's not hybridized. It's in the form that it's supposed to be. If you're not gluten intolerant and you can handle einkorn would be the way to go. Maybe I get some einkorn flour, make myself some sourdough. But you can't have it.
I can't have it.
I know. Well, we don't know
Keep
if you can't have
me.
It.
Don't dust my countertops with it either, please.
I know. We just don't know if you can have it or not.
Mm.
Because you might be, we don't know what flavor of gluten intolerance you have.
I would have to have a scheduled time that I wasn't doing anything for a few days to make that experiment.
To eat it and see what happens.
Because otherwise it's bad news.
I know. It's terrible, because I can't give you a test, because you've been gluten-free for so long.
Right.
You're going to have no antibodies.
Right. Exactly.
Phooey.
Phooey.
All right.
Yeah, I know.
I know. It's all right. But see, I can't. I would like to. But I eat einkorn pasta in the house, and it's all right.
You do.
I know.
Yeah, and I cook it. But
yeah.
I'm very careful about it when I do it.
Yeah, you stay
and
away from it.
I have separate colanders that I strain things with. I'm
very smart.
I'm very cautious about this.
That's good.
That's a good thing. I have learned.
I know. So the GAPS diet, that's very, so if you are suffering from any mental illness, the GAPS diet can be helpful. The GAPS diet can be helpful for anything. But it was created as the gut and psychology syndrome. So the other population it's used with is the people in the autistic population, in the spectrum population. So you're going to get really healthy gut flora if you have a healthy, Yes, go ahead.
And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to gapsdiet.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actual website which explains everything about the GAPS diet.
Yeah.
So you can check that all out, too.
Yeah.
It's all about natural digestive healing.
So let's talk about meds after all. So what happened was my father, God love him, my father got older. He retired. They retired, and they moved to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got down there, things were rough, and they got rougher. And I think one of the reasons they got rougher is, as I said, in my observation, I think that people, especially if they are not, if their mental illness is not controlled, they get worse as they age. And if they get into that 60-ish zone, they tend to what I call decompensate. And I think that's what started to happen, that my father's bipolar disorder got worse.
Yeah, they could be. It could also be the fact of, you know, it's a little easier to control when you're busy.
Perhaps.
So as you get less busy, as you have less things that are in your daily schedule or whatever, you might, your mental illness might kind of creep in a little more.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think it's part of the aging process. One of the things that happens as we age is that regeneration is a little bit more difficult. So if you're holding on to healthful cells, you know, if you're 25 and you pop a neuron because you went on a bender last night, it's going to be easier for you to regenerate that. Just if you look at Chinese medicine, you just have your postnatal jing. You have more of it.
Pop a neuron?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a technical term.
I got that.
Yeah. So you know, you drink your alcohol. Your alcohol goes through the alcohol dehydrogenase pathway. You get a bunch of acetaldehyde. The acetaldehyde does not like being acetaldehyde, so it borrows free radical, you know, electrons, thank you very much, from your nerves, and fries some neurons there, and then goes on to become vinegar and water and carbon dioxide and water. But first it has to go through that pretty toxic acetaldehyde phase, and that's what gives you your hangovers and your neurodegeneration.
And then you get a nasty headache.
You got right? it, yeah. So anyway, so people with bipolar disorder, there's some concern. So anyway, my father went through his life, and then he started to decompensate, and he was down in Florida, and finally it got to be too much, and they decided that it was time for him to go to the doctor. So a big shout out to Guillermo Oynick, who is the MD who helped my father and finally found the right cocktail for him. And he was at the funeral, and I said I was thankful at the funeral for the fact that my father found the right cocktail, but I wasn't in a frame of mind to put together. Dr. Oynick was there, and I could thank him directly. So now I'm thanking you on the air, and it's going to be on podcast, and you'll be thanked forever, and I'll send
there
him
you
a
go.
Card,
You should
too.
Send him a link to the podcast.
That, too.
There
and
you
I'll
go.
Send him a card and all that stuff.
Yeah,
anyway,
nice.
So thank you to him for all his hard work trying to get my dad happy, which he successfully did. So anyway, it started out that, you know, my dad started to go on various medications. And he went on over time, when he would let me, I would look in his drawer and I would see what he was on. And so over time, he was on different things. He was on different SSRIs. He was on fluoxetine. He was on mirtazapine, also known as Remeron. And mirtazapine is, I think it's a mixed SSRI, SNRI. So it has activity on both serotonin and norepinephrine. The thing with mirtazapine, it makes you want to eat the world.
Yeah.
So my dad did, and he got fat.
Yeah, your dad was getting larger.
He was getting larger.
Definitely larger.
I know. And he also, one of the things they put you on when you have issues with depression is thyroid, and whether you're hypothyroid or not. So my dad had that. His final cocktail that seemed to work for him was a combination of thyroid medicine, escitalopram, which is also known as Lexapro, Wellbutrin, also known as bupropion, and lithium. So thyroid medicine, of course. The thyroid medicine, I'm not sure if it's because it was just part of his cocktail or because he was also on lithium, and lithium affects thyroid function. But he was on thyroid. He was on escitalopram, as I said, is an SSRI. So the SSRI was helpful for him. He was also on Wellbutrin, also known as bupropion. Bupropion is interesting because it's a dopamine agonist. So it increases dopamine in the brain. And dopamine is a feel-good neurotransmitter. When your dopamine is low, you're not so happy. When your dopamine is really low, you have Parkinson's.
Oh,
when your dopamine is blocked, because you have anxiety or you've been diagnosed with psychosis or schizophrenia, you get tardive dyskinesia, which is a Parkinsonian-like syndrome that you get as a result of taking an antipsychotic drug. Because antipsychotic drugs block dopamine, so you get Parkinson-like symptoms, and that's called tardive dyskinesia. Anyway, my dad was simply on Wellbutrin, also known as bupropion, to increase his dopamine. And then finally, he was placed on lithium. So lithium is really interesting, and lithium has been around. People have been using lithium for about 70 years. Here, let me read this to you about lithium. It's lithium carbonate that they use. Some of the more compelling evidence for disordered neurobiology and bipolar disorder implicates the brain's serotonin syndrome and the actions of lithium specifically on the serotonin 1A receptor may be central to its antidepressive and anti-suicidal properties. So it works with the serotonin system. That's actually how it works. That's what they think. Characterizing the mechanisms by which lithium works in bipolar disorder promises to provide direct molecular targets for treatments that act similarly without with level of intolerability and risk of toxicity. In the last decade, we've developed the ability to quantify with a great deal of precision the number and distribution of serotonin system proteins in patients suffering the effects of bipolar disorder with PET scans and MRIs. And we're now in a position to test whether lithium has its most clinically significant actions through changes it causes in the serotonin system. And this guy examined in bipolar depression, the phase of bipolar disorder that dominates the condition is associated with most of the disorder's mortality and morbidity. Based on findings of animal models, they hypothesized that the lithium downregulates the presynaptic 5-HT1A receptor. So what that means is 5-HT stands for 5-hydroxytryptamine, which is the chemical name, a more chemical name for serotonin. So remember I was talking about the drugs that block the reuptake of serotonin. You have two nerves next to each other. Mm-hmm. One of them spits out serotonin. The nerve on the other side of the space called the synapse takes it up. Well, if you block the reuptake, you have more in the synapse, so you have more neurotransmitter around to make the person happy. All right, so lithium enhances that. So it isn't a serotonin reuptake blocker, but it enhances serotonin reuptake or enhances the blocking of serotonin reuptake. That's what I mean. So
very confusing.
So they found that this is how that worked. Hmm. There's also a brain size issue. Right. So one of the things that they found is that brain size changes, that there are parts of the brain that are smaller in people with bipolar disorder, and lithium can help to increase the size of the brain.
Really?
Yes. That certain parts of the brain, like the amygdala and the putamen, the parts of the brain that are associated with emotion are smaller in people with bipolar disorder, and lithium can help to increase their size.
Hmm.
So that's some of the interesting things, the interesting ways that lithium works. The other thing about lithium is lithium, you know, we were taught this up and down when I was in naturopathic college. Lithium has what we call a very narrow therapeutic window. So what that means is the blood level to get a biological effect, between the blood level to get a biological effect and the blood level to cause toxicity, it's very narrow. So when you take lithium, you have to get a lithium level taken regularly because it can cause toxicity. It can hurt your thyroid. It can hurt your kidneys. It could hurt your liver. So it can cause organ damage. So you have to keep it within a very narrow range. And yet there are people who, you know, they like to start people on other drugs that are not lithium and see if they work because of the toxicity that's associated with lithium. The SSRIs don't have the same kind of toxicity, nor does Wellbutrin. The other class of drugs that's often used for bipolar disorder is anti-seizure medicines. And so, and one really nice anti-seizure medicine is lamotrigine, also known by the brand name Lamictal. I've seen people take Lamictal. My dad was on it. I don't think he ultimately was on it, but he was on it for a time. And that was a pretty good drug. Whereas an anti-seizure med, it's a pretty mellow one. And it, if you take an anti-seizure med, one of the things that anti-seizure meds do is they globally stabilize membranes, and they can really knock out the person's ability to think and function. They just really dampen the effects of neurotransmitters. And my dad came to me once, he came to visit, and he was on Topamax at the time, topiramate, and it just, like, he didn't have his edge. He didn't have personality. He was just like,
ew,
okay. And I
good.
Saw him, and I'm like, Dad, you got to go back to the doctor. You can't be on this drug. And he was like, okay. And I never had seen him like that. It was crazy.
Right,
so,
because he's very sharp.
I know. And the wonderful thing was he said, okay, and he went back to Dr. Roynick, and he took him off it, and he continued to experiment. My parents joked about they get you in their care, and then they start to experiment.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's because we're all different. Everybody reacts differently to different things.
We're all different,
we're not cookie cutter.
And the drugs are, you know, not perfect. And I have to wonder if my dad was able to go to Hippocrates Institute or Canyon Ranch or one of those places where he could eat really good food and do a lot of yoga and meditate and get good counseling and just live a really healthy lifestyle, if he would have been okay. I don't know, because like you said, this is a genetic condition.
Right.
And if his brain was really smaller in those emotional parts, so it didn't work right, I don't know how much, you know, all that, those nice therapies would have worked.
How much is chemical
it
and
probably,
how much is, yeah.
And it would probably have made a big difference. I don't know if it would have made the ultimate difference, but the other thing is when you use natural medicine in tandem with using biomedicine, with MD medicine, you sometimes can use less of the biomedicine. Like you can use lower doses of drugs. You may not need as many drugs. And, you know, my parents, they were 50s people. So what did they do at 5 o'clock every night?
They had a cocktail.
Oh, yeah. And a snack.
Yeah.
At happy hour.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
We had happy hour. And mind you, we've been having happy hour since I was...
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. So happy hour is a thing they did.
Yeah.
And so even though my dad's on these meds that you're not supposed to drink with, they did anyway.
Yeah.
And they also liked their coffee. So if you think that caffeine and alcohol don't have psychiatric effects, you would be incorrect.
Yeah, that's correct.
So I have to wonder. The thing is that part of the deal was that they were on these medications, and I wonder if there would have been some better leveling if my dad wasn't into his coffee. And he was into really good coffee, just like you.
Yeah, well, there's only one way to be into coffee.
Yeah, that's really good coffee.
Right,
and
good coffee.
They also like their cocktail.
Friends don't let friends drink bad coffee.
I know.
Yeah.
And so my dad's favorite drink was a Gibson.
Which
is a martini with vermouth, gin, and an onion, not an olive.
Okay.
Yes. So we're going to be toasting Myron with martinis.
Okay.
Well, I'll have a sip. You can have the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, I know. That's not your game.
No.
For sure.
No. He liked good wine, so I can deal with the wine. Wine's cool.
We could do that.
All right.
We could do that.
And I could do the good coffee. That would be fine,
too. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so that's bipolar disorder. And so... what's really beautiful is that about 5 years ago, my dad went on lithium in addition to the other things. And I asked my mother, so, Ma, what do you think? Do you think it was because... So the other thing that happened is my father got involved with Chabad.
Right.
And my parents got involved with Chabad. And Chabad is a lovely organization. They are descended from the Hasidic Rebbe. And they are Hasidic themselves, and they are an organization that is all over the world. And what they do is they draw in Jews from all walks to practice more Judaism. And they're very loving, and they're very accepting, and they would like you to do whatever you can do. So even if you're not following Orthodox Judaism the way that you're supposed to, the way you're supposed to in strict Orthodox Judaism, they would like you to do whatever you can do. And so they're very happy to spend time with someone like me who is, I'm not an Orthodox Jew. So they were involved with Chabad down there, and they were involved with a very lovely family, the Chabad of Venice and Northport, which is headed up by Rabbi Shalom Schmerling and his wife Chaya Rivka Schmerling, who are just delightful, just lovely, lovely people. And poor Sholem Schmerling, my goodness, he loved my father like a father. And that was one of the...
He fell for your dad.
I know. And there were loads of people who did the same thing. They felt like my father was a father. So my father had difficulty being father because he had bipolar disorder. And so when he finally got his cocktail, he was happy. And then he started making connections with people that sustained. And all these people were like, he's like my father. He's like my... So Remy, this delightful man... who's down there? He was friends with. He would ride bikes with. And Remy is a Bedouin. How cool is that?
What?
He's a Bedouin.
What does that mean?
He's descended from the Bedouins. Those are
again. What does that mean?
It's an ethnicity in North Africa. In the Bedouins are from Morocco and Algeria, and they are what do you call it? They travel. You know, they they're migrants. They have
nomads.
No, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah,
the nomads.
All right.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Remy, you wouldn't know it to look at. I mean, he looks like a nice fit young man in a plaid shirt and jeans.
Okay.
And he's tall and he's a nice guy, but he's not wearing Bedouin outfit, but he's a Bedouin. Anyway, so Remy felt like my dad was his father as well. So did you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was your father-in-law, and it was a very special relationship for you because you lost your father when you were 28.
22.
When you were 22.
I was very young.
Right. And so now you had a very lovely relationship with your father-in-law. My dad loved you. He thought you were, you know, and also he thought you were very good for me, and that's really why he loved
you. Well, that's what he told me.
He
told me that I was very good for you.
Yes.
Your mom and your dad both.
Yeah.
For what it's worth.
Doted on you.
So just remember that the next time you go.
That I go off on you?
Yeah,
right.
That you, go off
that
on
you
me.
Annoy me.
Right.
Yes.
Because, you know, we're like an old married couple and, you know, sometimes people go off on other people.
No, they don't.
It happens.
I'll be quiet.
It does.
Okay. Anyway, so that was very delightful to hear. It was very delightful to hear how much people experience my father's father so this is a shout out to my friend Stephanie, who said this when she was talking on the phone with me. She said, isn't it wonderful that your father, after all that, he was able to redeem himself because he healed his relationship with you and then he was able to father all these other people.
Right.
So it was very sweet.
Yeah, it was
and
very nice.
You should have seen the rabbi. The rabbi was so broken up during the funeral. My goodness.
I talked to him on the phone the night of.
Yeah.
He was not good.
No, I know.
I know he was, you know, trying to hold it together because of your mom being there and all. And it was just happening right in front of them. But he was
broken up. So it was very understandable.
He was having a hard time holding it together with me just on the telephone.
I know. All right, so
anyway,
so next condition, my poor father.
Moving forward.
Moving along.
Moving
so
forward.
So here's the other thing. So now you get to hear my father's history.
This is so much nicer than hearing my history and then having my friends come up to me and going, boy, I know more about you than anybody.
Well, now they're going to know stuff about my dad.
That's right.
But anyway, so the next thing is the prostate cancer and the PSA. So one of the things that was going on was my dad had an elevated PSA. So PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen. So guys, this is something you should start getting checked when you turn 40. Just if your physician hasn't checked it yet, you should ask them to. And you should get it checked every year or so. And just make sure it's not going up. So prostatic-specific antigen rising simply means that there's some kind of a process going on in your prostate. It doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer. It's just like thyroglobulin in the thyroid. If you have an elevated thyroglobulin, it means you've got some kind of process in the thyroid. You could have inflammation. You could have a lesion. You could have a benign lesion. You could have an infection. You could also have cancer. So that's the important thing to remember about PSA. You can have a really high PSA and not have cancer.
So this requires a physical test, correct? I've had a physical test.
Well, the PSA is not a physical. It's a blood test.
And all the guys know what I'm talking about out there.
You mean a digital rectal exam?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a PSA. That's a digital rectal exam. Digital rectal because the prostate.
But they are checking to see if your prostate
is enlarged,
right?
Yes. So let's back up a minute and talk about what's a prostate. What's a prostate? Prostate is a gland. What's a gland? A gland is it's an organ that dumps some kind of fluid into your system for a purpose. And glands can be they can be endocrine glands and they can be exocrine glands. So endocrine glands dump hormones into your body by way of the blood supply. So they have a blood supply, and their blood supply, the hormones are made in the organ, and then the hormone is dumped into the blood supply and it gets into your blood. That's an endocrine gland. So examples of endocrine glands would be the pituitary, the thyroid, the ovaries, the testes, the adrenals. Those are all endocrine glands. Then there are exocrine glands. Exocrine glands are glands that dump fluids somewhere via tubes, via ducts. Okay, so examples of exocrine glands would be your sweat glands. Your pancreas is an exocrine gland. It has bile ducts that dump bile into your digestive system. And the prostate is an exocrine gland. So the prostate dumps prostatic fluid into your urethra. And that's what it's supposed to do, so that you can have fluid around your semen so that you can impregnate somebody. That's what the prostate does. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway, the prostate has a little tube that feeds into your urethra, and then stuff can come out of you. very nice. Anyway, so the prostate is very interesting because it wraps around the urethra. So the prostate is hormonally sensitive, and this becomes a problem when you live in 21st century North America or in industrial society, because we're exposed to things that make our hormones not work so well, and we're exposed to xenoestrogens and xenohormones, meaning hormones that come from outside our bodies, and those can cause the prostate to swell. And also, because of where the prostate is, the prostate, as I said, it wraps around the urethra, and the back of the prostate backs up against the rectum, which mm-hmm. is why you do a digital rectal exam and you can feel the prostate. And so it shares a wall. I mean, the prostate, it just butts up against the rectum, which is why you can feel it when you do a digital rectal exam. And you can feel whether it's enlarged, and you're looking for lesions as well.
Right. And it's also, and when it gets enlarged and swollen, it also causes trouble with urination, too.
That's
right.
Because it wraps around the
urethra. Because it wraps around. So
yes, indeed. It wraps around the urethra.
This
so
is an exercise in plumbing here.
You got it.
Choking off the pipe.
That's right. Yeah. So men who have enlarged prostates will often have trouble starting and stopping their flow of urine and might experience dribbling. Mm-hmm. So that's really common. So, and BPH is very, very common. I don't know what the stat is, but it's I don't know if it's most men get some level of it, but it's very, very common. I have so many men who come in and they're on drugs to help with urine flow, like Tamsulosin, which is also known as Flomax. There's a few different drugs that men get to take to help their prostate. Now, Cialis also helps with BPH. It's a drug that helps with erectile dysfunction, but it also helps with, it's basically the same mechanism. It all helps to improve urine flow and improve flow out of the prostate. So the prostate can enlarge hormonally. It can also be affected hormonally. You can get cancer. It can also become infected, and you can get prostatitis. Any of those can cause the PSA to rise. So when you have a persistently elevated PSA, you have to get checked out to see if you actually have cancer or not.
So here's the question.
Yeah.
Is that genetic or is it environmental?
I think my opinion is that it's mostly environmental. It's probably genetic too.
Really?
But I think it's mostly, prostate cancer is the same kind of deal as breast cancer. It's mostly environmental.
Wow.
Yeah. There's probably a genetic component to it. So like if you're a young man and you get a really bad version of it,
you're in trouble.
There's probably a genetic component there. Mm-hmm. But if you're 79 years old and you have prostate cancer,
you're normal.
Pretty much. That, in fact, most autopsies, when they check the prostate, they find there's cancer in it. And when you get prostate cancer when you're old, it's likely to be slow growing, indolent, and not a problem. So my dad, this was discovered, he was already in his late 70s,
right.
In all likelihood. So here's the other thing. When you're checking for prostate cancer, again, you're looking for that PSA to be elevated. And you have to check to see, you may choose to have a biopsy of the prostate.
And that's a blood test, right?
The PSA is a blood test. That is correct. Prostatic specific antigen. Like I said, it's just a piece, it's just protein from the prostate that's spilling into the blood because of inflammation.
So you see higher levels in the blood.
You got it.
Okay.
So my dad's was 16, which is high. It's 4 times the top of the range. It's not super high, but it's high. I've had patients I've seen in the 50s, much, much higher than that. And I'm like, go get a biopsy already. So anyway, my dad was about to go through that process and get a biopsy and find out what was going on. Chances are he had an indolent, harmless form of prostate cancer. It's possible it was a little more aggressive than that, but we don't know because, you know, it wasn't important when he finally died.
Right, right.
Anyway, so there's a thing in prostate cancer that's called a Gleason score. They don't do, when they do staging and grading of prostate cancer, they do the Gleason score. And the Gleason score is an addition of factors that include how big is the tumor, what's the nature of the tumor, how far has it spread. And a Gleason score of 6 is the best. It's the lowest. If you have prostate cancer, you have a Gleason score of 6, your treatment is going to be watchful waiting, and you're going to come to the naturopath, and I'm going to give you what for. So we hope that my dad had a Gleason score of 6. So the higher the Gleason score, the worse it is. But Gleason score of 6 is very good. There's a high, very high, a very good prognosis. And in fact, you may, if your Gleason score stays 6 the rest of your life, you're going to die of something else. And you can also do stuff to prevent it from progressing, like eating really healthy. One of the things is if you don't poop well, if you have constipation or you eat food that's not so good for you, and especially if you have constipation, remember, anything you eat, some amount of that is going to go through your colon. It's going to come out the other end. So if you're sending through sugar, if you're sending through chemicals, if you're sending through poor quality hormones, that can all impact your prostate. If you're eating a lot of sugar, that's going to cause inflammation in your body in general. If you don't have good gut flora, you're going to be more likely to have prostate problems. Conversely, if you have prostate problems and you want to correct them, eating a really good diet, getting exercise, staying away from processed food and sugar and fried food and all that stuff is going to improve your chances with prostate cancer. If you have simply an enlarged prostate, there are some herbs that can be helpful. One of the herbs is saw palmetto. So saw palmetto tends to block the production of dihydrotestosterone, which can tend to make the prostate rise, tend to make the prostate enlarge. Like I said, so the prostate, if my dad, we don't know if my dad had prostate cancer or not. He had a prostate process going on that he was about to have investigated, and it, in all likelihood, it wasn't a big deal. And so the drugs that they give, if someone has very serious prostate cancer, it depends how serious it is, they may give anti-hormone drugs like Andrew-Kerr and Lupron to settle the prostate down so it's not being fed with hormones, and which is very the nasty side effects. You basically go into menopause because you don't have your testosterone anymore. So those are nasty. You might be put on Arimidex. It might be put on aromatase inhibitor to block production of estrogen and testosterone to block the production of extra hormones. So the hormone's not feeding the prostate.
You've accused me of menopause before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're pretty good.
You think I'm pretty good?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, then the other drugs, if you simply have BPH, they tend to put you on drugs that help to increase the flow of urine by acting on the adrenergic receptors. So they act on the sphincters that open and close the urethra. And that's going to be your Tamsulosin, your Flomax. That's what that does. And Cialis does that as well, which is sildenafil. One is sildenafil and the other is something else, denafil. I forget which they are. The Cialis and the other one, Viagra. Hmm. They're both denafils, and I can't
the blue
which
one.
Is. Blue one is sildenafil, and Cialis is the other one.
The blue one with the women in the blue dresses.
Oh, jeez. All right. Enough out of you. Okay. That's your 101 on prostate concerns. All right. And so the last thing was my father was overweight. And he got on my sister for being overweight, but he was just as guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
He loved to eat, And I think I inherited that from him because I also love to eat.
There's a love of eating within the Storch
family.
I'm not
what you would call, you know, some people, oh, I just eat to live. No, I live to eat.
No,
I like really good food.
Not
I like
Franny.
To cook.
Franny
I like
likes
things,
her food.
I like things that taste good. I don't like things that don't taste good. I will drive and go out of my way to find something that tastes good. I will make something that's really delicious. I get excited about eating delicious things. I like food. My dad was the same way. All right. So there. Anyway,
yeah.
So he liked to, I've also inherited his liking of eating treats late at night. So he did that, but he did a lot more of it than I did. So he really had a thing for nuts, as I do. But he would sit with a thing of Planters honey roasted peanuts and eat most of the jar in a sitting. And he did that a lot.
I don't know anybody like that.
And as much as nuts are good, if you eat too many of them, you do get into a calorie situation. So I've trained myself to be judicious with my nuts. So I eat, I dole them out, eat little handfuls. There was some Planters peanuts, honey roasted peanuts left in the cabinet while I was down there. And I had two little handfuls. You know, I'm pretty good about it. And I have trained myself to not like the feeling of being excessively full. And if you eat too many nuts, you're going to be excessively full. So he overate. And I don't know if the drugs to some extent made him want to eat. Certainly when he was on mirtazapine, that was true. But he wasn't on that anymore. And Lexapro isn't too bad about making you want to eat. And Wellbutrin tends to curb that. Anyway, I think he just liked food. But what happened was he got overweight enough that he had made a decision that he was going to lose weight in the new year, and he started riding his bike again. He had ridden his bike 3 days in a row, and then the night that he died, he had gone out for a walk, and it was a walk for exercise. And so it was really nice. So his deal was he was going to start by putting the exercise in, and then he'd made a decision he was going to change his eating habits at the new year. So this brings us touching on that whole New Year's resolution thing. So I'm not going to be here next week to talk about it because I'll be in the air or getting myself to the air. So you're going to have to talk about New Year's resolutions next week.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So anyway... So my father was kind of interesting in terms of, because I think he did stuff. I mean, it would have been my pleasure to sit and talk to him about eating. And he wanted to lose weight all the time. He was always asking me, does this supplement work? Does that supplement work? He took raspberry ketones for a while. He took Ervingia for a while. Do those things work? Meh, maybe they work a little bit. What really works is finding the right diet for you and getting regular exercise and reducing your stress. That's the best thing if you want to lose weight. That's really the best thing to do. If you're hypothyroid and you need to take thyroid medicine, you can do that too, but only if you're hypothyroid. Otherwise, and then there are people who use speed, that they will take amphetamines or they'll take phentermine. And the phentermine, but it's an upper, it's speed, and
right.
it does
well,
help.
There's people that drink a lot of coffee to keep their weight down.
Yes, I know.
Mm.
I can't do that because I just get so sick. I mean, coffee, if I drink that much coffee, it will upset my stomach and I get major headaches. I just cannot do it. I'm a CYP1A2 slow metabolizer. That's not my polymorphism, baby. I just spoke Greek, didn't I?
You did something.
Yeah, I did. So anyway, I have, suffice it to say that I am a slow metabolizer of caffeine. And that means that caffeine will sit in my digestive system and irritate it and also give me nice headaches if I have too much of it. And after the shows, we're going to go and have some caffeine, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So anyway.
Absolutely. You know me and caffeine.
So
I like my
dad's thing was he was always trying these different diets. He was on Nutrisystem. I think he was headed towards Atkins. And he kept going on diets. And I have become less of a fan of the diet. And I am a huge fan of Jill Coleman and Jade Tita. Who talk about metabolic effect and a way of eating that is moderate, so that you're eating the same way all the time. There's no reason to have a New Year's resolution because you're eating in a moderate way all the time, and you don't deny yourself of stuff. So if you do want to have some of that wonderful peppermint bark, which I've been enjoying. You don't have a lot of it. And the other thing is this time of year, you keep your exercise up. So the more calories you burn, the more you get to eat. And you make sure you're doing resistance training so you have some muscle mass, so your caloric burn is going to be higher. But the other thing is to, the big thing is to train yourself, which is against our nature, unfortunately, to train yourself to eat in moderation. That is the best thing to do, because if you do that, then you don't have to go on a diet. You can have whatever you want, unless you're eating a food intolerance. If you eat a food intolerance, you'll be sick. But if you make a commitment to eat a diet, for the most part, that is very healthy for you, and most of the time that's what you eat, and you have a thing for Munson's fudge, so you get the Munson's fudge. You just don't eat the whole block all at once, unless you just rode your bike 100 miles. And let me tell you, I went to Munson's. I got the German chocolate fudge. That was good. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. That was pretty good. But I was very good. I just broke it up over several days. And so that would be the way to do it, to mostly eat your protein and produce, and to have that be the biggest part of your diet, and to have your little add-ins, your nuts and seeds, if you're not dairy intolerant, a little bit of dairy. Have your grains. I prefer gluten-free, or at least avoiding modern wheat if you're not gluten intolerant, that if you're going to eat wheat, it's better if it's einkorn. That is my position, and that is what I follow. And I have made a rule for myself. I the only gluten that I eat is einkorn. I don't eat modern wheat. I don't make exceptions. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's your wedding, or I don't care if it's you just baked me a wonderful loaf of challah. I'm not having it unless it's gluten-free.
There are places out there you can get the substitutions. Are some really fabulous places now that you can get gluten-free.
Did you taste that bread from Sam's?
Yeah, it was not bad.
It was great. I loved it.
I like Three Bakers better.
Do you really?
A lot.
Although I must say.
Considerably.
I must say the Sam's, I was very pleased with the Sam's. When I had a piece without toasting it, when it was fresh, it was very good. I had it with sunflower butter on it and jam. It's wonderful.
No, it's good.
But
the Three Bakers is much better.
All right. So we like Three Bakers. Even Sam's bread from Walmart was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if Sam's bread is really Canyon. It might actually be Canyon.
I think it is because it reminds me a lot of Canyon.
It's the same. Well, Canyon is good.
And it tastes the same, and it has the same texture to it and all. So
Canyon.
I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
So what's the best diet, Dr. Storch?
The best diet is the one that works for you.
There you go. Yeah. I was waiting for that.
So, happy holidays. I hope that you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah and a Happy Kwanzaa. I'll be back in 2 weeks because I'm going to go back down to Florida and spend time with my mother. And so Ron will be holding down the fort here.
You'll have to endure me instead.
Yes, so he'll talk to you about New Year's resolutions or whatever he wants to talk about.
We'll figure something out.
So this is my love song to my father. I love you, Daddy. I miss you very much. And So this show is dedicated to him, and I talked about some of his health issues in an effort to educate you. So I hope that was helpful for you. So you've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, and this has been Radio Naturopath.